Chapter 5. The sharp, brittle grass stems were like a fakir's bed of nails that ripped at Nina's nightgown and tore the skin on her bare arms and legs. Disregarding the pain, she dug her knees and elbows into the sand and kept moving. She had no other choice. If she stood up to run, she'd be dead. The killers had found her too quickly, almost as if they had followed a map to her hiding place. She cursed in the native tongue of her grandmother. They did have a map. The harbor works diagram she had painstakingly drawn lay in plain sight on her work table. The tunnel had been rendered as two bold lines and clearly labeled. Once the killers discovered her underwater escape route, they had only to search the beach for footprints and follow them into the wadi. The voices rose in pitch and volume, became more excited, coming from where she had climbed out of the riverbed. The killers must have found where she'd disturbed the banking. Nina made a sharp turn and crawled parallel to her original route, doubling back until she came to the riverbed. She peered from between blades of grass. No one was in the wadi. She slid down the banking and raced with head low toward the beach. The riverbed was churned up by footprints, which indicated that a sizable party was tracking her down. Soon she glimpsed the blue-green of the sea. The turquoise ship was still anchored offshore. She paused where the waterway once emptied into the ocean. The empty beach beckoned like a highway in both directions. Voices and the crunch of footsteps came from behind. Again the killers had spread out like hunters trying to flush a quail. She'd be seen whether she went to the right or the left. As on the previous night, the watery route remained her only choice. Nina peeled off her ripped and sand-caked nightgown, tossed it aside, and sprinted in camisole and underwear across the hard-packed, gravelly delta washed out by centuries of river flow. She hoped the dune ridge would screen her until she reached the water's edge. Still no outcry as she splashed into the shallows. She was aware how vulnerable she was, completely out in the open with no darkness or tunnel to hide her. Any second the killers would crest the dunes, and she'd be an easy target for their bullets. The knee-deep water covering the salt flats seemed to go on forever, slowing her progress but offering no protection. She pressed on, leaping with long strides, and eventually the water got to waist level. She dove under just as angry lead bees filled the air. The water behind her erupted in a patch of angry foam. Nina dove under and swam off at an angle for as long as she could, surfaced for air, and dove again porpoise-style. Once beyond the brownish water over the flats and into the deeper blue ocean, she glanced back and saw maybe a dozen figures on shore. Some had waded into the shallows. The gunfire seemed to have stopped. Pivoting, Nina fixed her eye on the ship, concerned that it would weigh anchor and leave her between the devil and the deep blue sea. A swim to the Canary Islands wasn't in her plans. Rolling onto her back, she looked up at the puffy, gilt-edged clouds and caught her breath. At least it was a good day for a swim. She rested only a minute. She had to get the blood moving in her body again. Pace yourself. Rest when necessary, and count your blessings. Calm sea and no wind or currents. No different from the swim phase of a triathlon, except for one thing. If she lost this race, she would die. Taking a bead on the ship's mainmast, she threw one arm in front of the other. Without her wristwatch, there was no telling how long she swam. The water grew colder the deeper it got, and she counted strokes to take her mind off the energy-sapping chill. Waving at the ship would be a waste of time. Her arm would look like the neck of a floating seabird. She tried singing sea shanties. The old shipboard work songs helped keep the rhythm of strokes. Her repertoire was slim. And after she'd sung Blow the Man Down for the 50th time, she simply chopped away at the sea. She drew closer to the ship, but her strokes were becoming sloppy, and she stopped to rest more often. At one point she spun around and was pleased to see she was leaving the low brown shore far behind her. To give herself courage, she imagined climbing aboard the ship and washing away the salty dryness of her mouth with a steaming mug of hot coffee. The deep, thrumming sound was so faint, she didn't notice it at first. Even when she stopped to listen, Nina thought it might be water pressure in her head, or maybe even the noise of a ship generator. She rolled one ear in the water and listened. The droning was louder. Nina slowly wheeled around. A dark object was racing in her direction from shore. She thought it was a boat at first, but as it grew quickly in size, Nina made out a squat, ugly black hull she recognized as that of a large hovercraft, an amphibious vehicle that moves across land and sea on a cushion of air. It moved back and forth in a series of sharp-angled turns, but Nina sensed this was no rescue boat executing a search pattern. Its course was too determined, too aggressive. All at once it stopped zigzagging and came straight at her like a bullet. She must have been spotted. Rapidly it closed the distance and was practically on top of her when she dove as deep as she could go. The hovercraft skimmed overhead on its 10-inch cushion, churning the water into a wild frenzy. When she could stay under no longer, Nina surfaced and sucked in air, only to cough as the purple exhaust fumes filled her lungs. The hovercraft spun around and made another pass. Again she dove. Again she was tossed and buffeted, only to fight her way back to the surface, where she bobbed in the wake. The hovercraft stopped, settling down into the water with its engines purring, facing Nina like a big cat toying with a mouse. A weary and waterlogged mouse. Then the engines came to life. The hovercraft rose up on invisible legs and charged again. Nina dove and was tumbled like a rock in a polishing machine. Her brain was numb. Blood thundered in her ears. She was reacting on pure instinct. The game would end soon. The damn thing could turn on a dime. Each time she surfaced, she had less time to take in air, and the craft was closer than before. The blunt hull was coming at her again, although she could hardly see it with the exhaust cloud and her eyes bleary and stinging from salt water. She was too exhausted to dive and wouldn't have the strength to fight her way up from the sea again. She made a pitiful attempt to swim out of the way. But after a few strokes, she turned to face her attacker as if she could beat it back with her fists. The hovercraft was nearly on top of her, its flatulent roar filling her ears. She clenched her jaw and waited. The horror of the past several hours was nothing compared to what happened next. The hovercraft was only seconds away when her ankles were clutched in a vice-like grip, and she was dragged down into the cold depths of the sea.